Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Colleen.
My name is Bridget.
And today on the show, we are going to be talking to Caroline Keating, who is a nutritionist. And we're going to talk all about what she does, but she works one-on-one and in groups. And our topic today is going to be about sugar levels. And I confess, I'm a sugar addict. Always have been, always will be. If you give me the choice between something healthy and a bag of M&Ms, I will choose the M&Ms every time. And so on that train of thought, Bridget has a story to tell about some M&Ms.
Oh my gosh. Oh, well, so I was reading about Caroline's, all of her website, which is really fantastic and has recipes and everything on it. And I was reading another book that was talking about the importance of health, especially as we get older and how that plays a role in everything. And I was really motivated and I was cleaning out stuff and like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And my husband walked in. He works for a retailer and their vendors sent all this stuff. It was a 4x3 box, probably 4-inch depth of a ton of stuff. There were at least 20 packages of M&Ms in it. The new fudge M&M. With fudge in it. A purple package. And, oh, Hershey bars. And Twinkies. And chips. And Pringles. And 10 packages of mascara. And energy shots. And I was like,
gosh.
Are you kidding me?
He was sabotaging you on day one.
He walked in like he was trying to get through the door. And I thought it was my new rug that was supposed to be coming in for my kitchen, for my redone kitchen. And I'm like, oh, that's my rug. And he went, no, it's not.
That's like, your M&Ms.
I was like, are you kidding? I mean, it's just he and I in this house. And like you said, I love sugar. Like I was the person who would eat a few bites of the food just to get to the dessert. Like, that was it. Like I would definitely pick dessert any day over the normal food. But I'm starting to realize you don't feel so good after you have all that dessert. So I was just like, I think somebody's out there trying to get me. I'm pretty sure.
I sent it.
No. I think it's all the vendors for this company knew it. They knew it. And so they just sent this.
Well, it is going to be Halloween soon because we
were
chatting.
I know, but are you kidding? You expect
guest on this
to last?
Probably this is up after.
Yeah, we're taping this in September. And are you kidding me? Now, when I was a kid, I think it leads to 12 kids, which you were one
for. Oh, right.
If sugar did not last in the South, or sugar products did not last. I mean, if mom came home with a box of sugar cereal, it was gone by the end of the day. Because it got to the point where I better eat this or my brother's going to eat all of it we would grab it like, are you kidding? That toy? I never saw the toy. That was, it was gone. I was like, I never knew what a cereal toy box or whatever a box of cereal toy was.
You mean the bottom of the box that had the
somebody
toy
always
in it.
Got to it by me before I did. So I'm going to buy me all the box.
So basically you're going to be on a sugar high for the next 6 weeks.
I've got to get rid of this.
Save a few because you'll feel deprived if you get rid of all of it. Like, so maybe save one of each. Well, like this topic, I was reading one of Caroline's articles and the topic of sugar was in it. I hadn't even realized that when you have low sugar levels, a lot of the symptoms will mimic your menopause symptoms. So if you're dieting to lose weight because you gained weight in menopause, you don't realize it's triggering some of these symptoms. You're just thinking, oh, those are my menopausal symptoms. No, you don't have enough sugar. And that's a dangerous combination. And then there's diabetes and pre-diabetes. There's so many facets to that that, you know, you and I were like, we need to get her on the show.
Right. And it's so amazing too. It's not a calories in, calories out thing. That's been such a myth for so many years, but it really is about what you are eating. The nutritional value of what you are eating. So,
as you get older, you really
not one of them. Yeah.
Well, everything in moderation. Because I do think as we get older, we're like, come on, let me have a handful or whatever. And I think it's all about moderation. It's about learning.
It is.
Because if you deprive yourself, then you end up going to buy a box and shoving face in it.
So I should just buy the fun size pack one.
Right. Or one. I mean, I don't know about the Twinkies, because like you and I were talking about before, it has a shelf life of like 50,000 years.
I wonder how
long after we're gone.
How many caskets are full of just Twinkies sitting there? took the casket apart, there's just Twinkies. So,
and even if on our Facebook group, I posted one day about YooHoo Twinkies or some drink now.
Oh my gosh.
Talk about just diabetic coma after that.
Yeah, they're not really, Twinkies really aren't even that good. They're really not.
Yeah.
I mean, now, sorry, hostess, don't get me.
Don't talk to me about devil dogs, because I grew up on, I love them.
I love ding dogs.
So we're not really the Twinkie fans. We're more of a devil dog ding dog.
We like the chocolate, but I don't want to get sued by hostess, but
we love them. We love them. You know,
I just find that the Twinkies just aren't as delicious. That's me. I'm probably going to get in trouble.
No, but like some people fry them, like fried Twinkies.
Oh yeah. I'm from Kentucky. At the state fair.
Jersey, they didn't fry them.
They did.
Caroline, who would probably be shocked at this conversation because of her nutritional background, is a nutritionist. She's passionate about helping individuals understand how their bodies function. She's a busy mom of two teenagers. She was actually in the corporate world for like 20 years. And then she decided to get her master's in nutrition. So she went back and did that at Oxford Brookes University. And she's registered with the Association of Nutrition. She takes more of a functional medicine approach, which I like because it kind of looks at the whole body and the person. Mm-hmm. It's not just numbers. So she's looking at your stress levels, which we talk about, and things like that. And she has one-on-one courses. She's also coming out with a group course in January that you will hear about as well. So we're going to let Caroline take over this conversation on blood sugars, and we'll talk to you after. Welcome back to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, everybody. Today we have on Caroline Keatings, and Caroline has agreed to join us to talk about blood sugar levels and menopause, a topic I really wasn't that familiar with until I read an article that she wrote that kind of was like, oh, we need to bring this on the show to have as a topic. So welcome, Caroline.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me along. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we are excited to talk about this because anytime that we can share information for our midlife listeners that may be something they didn't even think about, which honestly, my blood sugar levels and diabetes and hormone fluctuation, I mean, it's not something that you think, oh, wow, this could really affect your health. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about the importance of your blood sugar levels? Let's start there.
Yes. So I have thought about how not to make this too complicated.
Thank you.
But I'm very good at going off on tangents. So I'll try not to, but because there are so many different levels at which blood sugar affects us and affects us in menopause. So on one level, and this isn't just menopausally related, but obviously it becomes more important in menopause, blood sugar, and particularly the reason blood sugar is so important is because of the impact it has on insulin. So we can talk a little bit about insulin, but insulin has a major effect on how our estrogen is metabolized. And it has an effect on our estrogen levels through three different routes, if you will, through the actual metabolism of estrogen, so the pathways that estrogen goes through our bodies. And as you probably know, estrogen, there are enzymes that are involved in the manufacture of estrogen in our body. And some of those enzymes are up and down regulated by insulin. And so it has a major effect on the actual manufacture of estrogen. It has an effect on the transportation of all of our sex hormones, because insulin has an inverse relationship with sex hormone binding globulin. And so it can have an effect through that route. And it also has an effect through stress. So again, there's an inverse relationship between insulin and stress. And stress has an inverse relationship with estrogen in our body. So it's very complicated, but it basically means that blood sugar and our management of blood sugar and the effect it has on insulin has a huge impact on estrogen levels in our body. And as we go through menopause, our estrogen levels are all over the place anyway. And so we need to do everything we can to try and really regulate those. Then there's two other bigger ways that it has an effect as well. One is in terms of many women, as they get to menopause, and there are a lot of reasons why this happens, are susceptible to weight gain. And I know you've done fabulous podcasts in the past about that. So without getting into why weight gain is particularly problematic in menopause, but if we look at some of the drivers that people are struggling with, one of them is obviously cravings. And I really distinguish between my clients, between cravings and hunger. And cravings are very often hormonally driven. So it's basically your body striving to survive and striving to keep blood sugar within certain levels. And insulin, too much, an excess of insulin in your body can really drive cravings. I can explain that in more detail if you want. And then the third way that it can really have an impact is as we go through menopause, we are more susceptible to insulin resistance. And so it's even more important than it was premenopausally that we really try and manage our blood sugar levels, because obviously insulin resistance is a precursor to metabolic syndrome, to type 2 diabetes. So it's just, it cuts across the whole spectrum.
Now, I know I've read a lot of your articles, and I know that you really advocate having a very colorful meal. So I didn't know, is that one of the ways that you would say to help regulate insulin?
So one of the main ways to help regulate insulin is it's really making sure that your food is it goes back to, you know, I don't know if it was the 80s or 90s, we talked about low glycemic index diet. So really looking at food that takes a long time for your body to digest. And that's because in many ways our bodies haven't really evolved a lot from their kind of prehistoric days, where once you ate a food, most food came in a pretty raw form and took a long time to digest. And so the body released hormones like insulin, which is an essential hormone in our body. Talk to anybody who's type 1 diabetic, they can tell you that. But insulin is a storage hormone. It either helps your cells to take up blood sugar and translate them into energy to cellular level, or you store that excess blood sugar. And so if we want to manage that release of insulin, if you eat a very highly processed food, your body thinks, oh my God, you've had you have just had, you know, talk about feasting. We've one ginormous meal coming down the track. And so there's a big release of insulin. Whereas in fact, you've just eaten some food that's all been digested very quickly. And so then you have an excess of insulin. So the diet you need to eat, colorful is really important, partly because lots of goodness you're going to get from phytonutrients. It's really important to try and lower the processed food element, to try and eat lots of unprocessed real foods. And the other thing you can do that really helps to manage the glycemic load or how quickly a meal is digested is to mix carbohydrate with protein and fat. So if you're having an apple for a snack, have it with some peanut butter or some nuts, because that is going to slow down the digestion of that carbohydrate.
Okay, that is a good one to know.
Can you talk a little bit more about insulin? Because I think a lot of people don't exactly understand what insulin does in the body and how it can spike and kind of have that up and down in your system.
Sure. So insulin is a hormone released by a pancreas, and it's released, it's triggered by a rise in blood sugar in our blood levels. So you digest carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are broken down into simple sugars, absorbed through the gut lining, and become blood sugar, blood glucose in our blood. Now, glucose is obviously, it's a really essential energy source, and there are parts of our body that really, glucose is their number one source of energy. Things like your brain, your muscles, and so for survival, the body has to keep a constant supply of blood sugar available. Obviously, your brain is functioning all the time. It doesn't operate on a kind of three meals a day basis. It needs a constant supply of blood sugar. And so our bodies have designed to be able to maintain blood sugar between a really narrow range. You don't want blood sugar too high, and it's very dangerous if it gets too low. And so insulin is one of the key hormones that helps our body do that. And the way it does it is insulin is released on consumption of carbohydrate and presence of blood sugar in the of glucose in the blood. And then the insulin, as I've mentioned, does two things. One is, whilst glucose is energy, in fact, our cells can't actually take that cell, that energy up on their own. And so insulin is almost like a key to open the door of the cell. So the cell can take in that glucose, and then the cell itself goes through a really complicated process to take that glucose from that sugar energy source and translate it into energy at a cellular level called ATP. So insulin is absolutely imperative to help your cells do that. But once all of that, all of the cells are replete, they've got all the glucose they need, and you still have an elevated blood sugar, insulin then knows that most people eat two or three times a day. And particularly if we look at prehistoric times, you weren't, you know, there was no constant snacking and grazing. And so you need to store all of that wonderful energy of it, so it's available for use in between meals, in between the time when you have food. And so there is another hormone called glucagon, which actually does the inverse of insulin. So that's a hormone that is released when your blood sugar levels drop and your body needs to turn to its natural stores of energy and reconvert them back into glucose, so back into the bloodstream. Mm-hmm. But the reason you get cravings is this glucagon doesn't operate when you have an excess of insulin in the blood. And so those, if we've eaten this very highly processed meal, we've had a big release of insulin. All that insulin has done its job really well. And because there's so much of it, it's actually stored too much sugar away. So our sugar levels have dropped. And so what the body should be doing is saying, right, okay, blood sugar's down. Where do we go? We go to our stores of glycogen, we go to our fat stores, and we get this blood sugar back up. That process doesn't happen because this glucagon isn't released. And so that's when you get cravings, because your body is saying, come on, we need some sugar. And you, that's why 11 o'clock in the morning, after your sugar puffs for breakfast, 11 o'clock, you're going, I need something to eat. And you do. Because your body's helping you live.
Were you watching me eat breakfast this morning? Is that?
No. Are there some sugars, like honey, for example, is that a better choice than sugar? Or should you try to like not have as much of that as well?
Yeah, I mean, basically all sugar is sugar. So okay. It's slightly better for you. And it has a slightly lower glycemic index, so it's not quite as rapidly absorbed. And it comes with a few other nice things. But essentially, what has happened in so many of our diets, because 70% of the products that we buy off the shelf has got sugar in, we've kind of become customized to really sweet tasting foods, and that's part of the problem. And you can retrain your taste buds, because as well, if you use a lot of, not all of them, but some artificial sweeteners, mm-hmm. can actually cause an insulin response, because you would think, well, that's a good thing, I'll use an artificial sweetener and we'll be fine. But actually you can get an insulin response just from the artificial sweetener.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily going to fix the problem.
What is the daily amount of sugar intake that is okay for a midlife woman on average?
Gosh, that's a good question. I didn't look that up, but we look at sugar. So normally the daily intake is looked at in two different levels. So it's looked at in, you obviously have, because carbohydrates break down into simple sugars. So you have sugars that are just inherent in the food you eat. And then you have added sugar. So off the top of my head, I think it's about 25 grams, but I'd have to go back and check that.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
Hockey was making me think, okay. I wonder what the...
It's very easy. I remember I've occasionally, not necessarily for adults, but I've occasionally read, you know, if I get a subscription to a cooking magazine, and sometimes I just see red because they put out a recipe for kids. And the sugar intake in that recipe is more than the recommended daily allowance per serving for a child during the day. So, you know, it's the problem is it's really quite low and it's very easy to go over it.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting was how low sugar levels, the symptoms of low sugar levels can actually mimic some menopausal symptoms like dizziness and irritability. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because women may not even realize that it could be one or the other.
Yeah. And it's something that certainly kind of, it's amazing how many clients come in the door who, I mean, we're talking about blood sugar problems, but who are actually really under eating. And it, you know, it's a problem that many people can have because so many people have been yo-yo dieting and, you know, really struggling. And, you know, there's this belief that kind of low calories are good for you. And so it can be a real problem. I have people who come in saying, I'm really struggling energy-wise. I do a food diary and I'm like, you're eating 1,200 calories a day and, you know, you're running a household, a business, a family. Mm-hmm. You just can't do this. So I think it's very easy to confuse lots of different symptoms. But yes, if you've got low blood sugar, you are going to be feeling dizzy. You might have a few palpitations. You might be really struggling to concentrate. And these are all symptoms that are also associated with the menopause. And so it can be hard. And that's where sometimes just doing a food diary, just looking at what are you eating, just really, you can obviously check your blood sugar, but you can interpret a lot just by looking at what you're eating, looking at your symptoms during the course of the day, looking how you feel. As well, for people with blood sugar issues, they probably will see big fluctuations. So if they eat a meal, they might have this and they suddenly have a huge rush of insulin. That's when you get that fatigue and you almost fall asleep. If you have a big carbohydrate meal, you kind of maybe want to sleep 2 hours afterwards. And that again is insulin playing a role there.
I was curious because a lot of women don't realize that as we can get older, we should be checked for pre-diabetic levels as well, because they think, oh, this is just menopause or perimenopause. And it could actually be something a little more sinister that they should have checked. When you have someone come in that is suffering from a lot of these menopausal symptoms, do you first look at their sugar levels and say, okay, let's see if this is the culprit?
What I first do is I take a full health questionnaire and I look at their food diary and I really kind of look at it from a observational perspective before kind of diving in and doing lots of testing. In the UK, a lot of women will potentially have had their sugars checked by the doctor, so they will know kind of where they sit from a blood sugar perspective. And if we do have, if their fasting glucose levels are too high, then that's something that we'll bear in mind and we'll work on as well. So I don't normally see people with low blood sugar problems. Normally people would come in with or low fasting glucose. Normally people come in on the upper end rather than the low end.
End of it. So you do a lot of work with women in midlife, in the nutrition area. So, how does stress play a role in all of this? That was something I was reading your articles and I was like, yeah, I wonder how much stress plays a role in this.
How does stress not play a role?
That's true.
Why does stress play a role in everything?
Anything.
In life?
That's true. That's true.
It plays a role. So at a menopausal level, even premenopausal level, so stress, particularly cortisol. Cortisol is obviously one of our main stress hormones, and it's a steroid hormone. So it is formed from cholesterol, as are all of our sex hormones. So progesterone, testosterone, estrogen, everything else in between that aren't hormones that most people recognize. They're all formed from cholesterol, as is cortisol. Now, you'll probably hear, and people talk a lot about this thing called cortisol steel, which is where it's believed that the cortisol pathway, so the manufacture of cortisol, takes priority over the manufacture of stress hormones. And if we kind of go back to our caveman days, kind of makes sense. If you're in a really stressed situation, you don't need to go making babies. In fact, the opposite, you really should not be making babies. But there's current research is debating a little bit about whether this is cortisol steel, partly because the kind of reservoirs of where these hormones are made, it's not like you've got some central reservoir. But what is indisputable is an inverse relationship. So when cortisol levels are high, DHEA, which is one of the parent sex hormones, if you will, is low. So there's a very clear relationship between those two. And so as we go into menopause and our estrogen levels are decreasing, our progesterone levels are decreasing, if cortisol levels are really high, that is just going to be exacerbating the problem because we want as much hormone as we can get. But then you get the other effect, which is I recently wrote a blog article on the effect of stress and weight loss. And what a lot of women may not realize is, you know, they're trying to lose weight, but they're extremely stressed. So if you're very stressed, that's going to raise your insulin levels anyway. What is insulin? It's a storage hormone. So you're trying to lose weight when your body is trying to hang on to it. Your body can't lose weight if it's in a very stressed situation.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a fight or flight mode, like they were saying. Yeah. And I can see that because I can tell, especially right now, like you're doing all these things. I see all these people trying to exercise, walk, and they're talking about how it just, nothing is changing. Things aren't budging. So that is a very good explanation.
So you just explained why.
You just explained it. Why. That's what's happening, y'all.
It does get into this thing that if you're really, you know, if you're a really super exercise bunny, you're kind of out there pushing all the boundaries, you may actually, by pulling back that exercise, you may actually be more successful in losing weight. We kind of, yes, movement is absolutely essential, but a kind of high stress, prolonged cardio activity may not be. Every individual is different. So there, you can't kind of come out with a blanket statement, but it may not be helping you if you're struggling to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a midlife woman come in and she has been, you know, has a high sugar level diet, what is kind of the first thing you have them do? Do a food diary or cut out XYZ?
So I always get people to do a food diary if I am working with them one-on-one because it's essential that I understand where they're at. Food diaries, I would say I've done them myself. It is almost impossible not to tell the truth in a food diary because, but, you know, even when I've done them myself, you go to eat something, you think, I'll have that tomorrow. No, I don't need that today. So food diaries are really hard. And I always say to everybody I work with, I am totally unjudgmental. I have seen it all. So the more you can tell me, the more I can help. But a food diary is really essential. But the first thing that almost everybody I work with that we do is we work on breakfast. And that's because when we go back to this insulin roller coaster that I was talking about before, once this roller coaster starts, it's really, really hard to stop. So if you've had a highly processed, rapidly digested breakfast, and then your blood sugar levels drop, and so you're driven to have a snack, and so it's probably going to be quite a highly processed snack, and so you kind of back on this roller coaster. So you know, different people, whatever time of day you break your fast, that meal is, the shape of that meal is really important. So I really look to increase the protein content of that meal, to make as much as possible the carbohydrates more, less refined, more slowly digested, and to add in some healthy fats. So breakfast is almost without exception the first place we start.
Okay.
What are some examples that would be?
I was going to ask that.
Because, you know, you hear people say things like that, like, but not everyone knows what that means, like what it would look like.
Yeah. So I give my clients normally two different avenues. So eggs are an absolute perfect breakfast. But and so you can have eggs on toast, but try and have some other stuff around it. So if you could have, what I try and do when I cook dinner is I always try and make excess vegetables. Some people, it takes them a while to get you round to having vegetables at breakfast, but you just start slowly. Start with something you're comfortable with, maybe tomatoes or mushrooms that we recognize, you know, are on a breakfast plate quite easily. So eggs are really good. They're absolute little superfoods on their own. They're packed with vitamins. And please eat a whole egg. Don't have an egg white kind of omelet or something. Eat the whole egg because we're taught to be scared of fats. But I've talked about our hormones are made from fat. Fats have so many essential vitamins. We have fat-soluble vitamins. And eggs are real little powerhouses. So eggs are wonderful. And I often make a big frittata. So I made one yesterday. So I roasted a whole cauliflower. I roasted a lot of peppers. I sauteed off an onion. I sauteed off some bacon. I put that in a huge pan. I do like an 18 egg frittata. We're talking big. Wow. I put that in, I put tomatoes on top and I bake it for about an hour. And then if you're somebody who's got no time in the morning, you've got breakfast for the week, just a slice of frittata, mm-hmm. and you're good to go. Okay. If you want to go the other way, eggless. So what you really want to do is then you're looking at particularly nuts and seeds. And if you're looking, say, at porridges, you try and, I mean, I now have, on a day when I'm not having eggs, I just have seeds. I have chia, pumpkin, sunflower, sesame, flaxseed. Most people would probably start with a kind of oat-based mix, but take out half your oats and replace them with seeds. The only thing I would flag up is if you have not eaten a lot of fiber, if you don't eat a lot of seeds, start really slowly because
we're planning to be home for the day.
Particularly, I love chia seeds, but particularly chia seeds and flax seeds can be quite irritant to a gut.
Okay, so start out slowly. Okay, that's good advice.
Right, because a lot of women have gut issues too that come up in food sensitivities in midlife.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if they start too fast, they may just say, "I'm not doing this." They may drop it. So
I'm always surprised. I've worked with women who've said to me, "No, you know, I'm fine. I've had this," and then they kind of go in hard because they want to make change. And then they're going, whoa. And it's just like, no matter how much you don't think you're going to have a problem, better to start slow. You could have I don't do a lot of shakes, but you could have a protein shake.
That's true.
But the thing to be careful there is to try and, I don't know brands that are good in America, but to try and really look at the ingredients because a lot of them are full of rubbish. So you really want to get something that has as high a protein content and is as pure. So if it's whey protein, it really is just whey. If it's pea protein, because a lot of them can come with a lot of other stuff.
Okay, that's good advice too. Because, people get the powder and put it in there. Yeah.
And that kind of leads me to a question I was thinking about. You know, a lot of people do make smoothies for breakfast and they put a ton of fruit in there. And fruit has a natural sugar. Do you have to be cognizant of how much fruit you put into a smoothie?
Oh, yes. And that's one of the challenges. Not only are you putting fruit in, but you are pulverizing it. So, in fact, you're doing a lot of the pre-digestion process that your body would normally do for you. So, in fact, you're making it really into a very highly processed, high sugar product. And so for a lot of women, particularly when I have women who are struggling with blood sugar, I really just say two portions of fruit a day. And so if you're having a smoothie, just put one fruit element in and then put some vegetables in. You could put avocado, can help make it really creamy. You know, you can put, if you're dairy milk, if you're not, plant milk, or you can put kefir in. I've just started making my own kefir at home. So there's lots of things you can put in. But if you are very used to a smoothie you make, say, with frozen berries and bananas and some apple juice, you're going to have to wean yourself slowly into something, you know, because if you suddenly make a kale, you know, kind of apple avocado, it's going to be a shock.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. That is
just
good advice.
Just you saying that, I'm like, no.
What about yogurts? And in your smoothie, I used to put yogurt in.
You can put yogurt in. I mean, again, just remember, you know, lactose is a carbohydrate. So just, you need to kind of, you need to just look at it as a whole, but absolutely you can put a yogurt in a nice yogurt that's, you know, that's actually got some, it's kind of bacterial based rather than kind of something else based, you know, you're going to get some of that benefit too.
Okay.
You know, I would make them and I would just put banana, peanut butter, and almond milk. Mm. And just, is that okay? Okay. Thumbs up. She did a thumbs up. I'm happy. Okay. Because you really, you know, there's too many flavors sometimes. And I'm one of those people that I the idea of putting a vegetable in with it, it just freaks me out. I don't know why, but.
I've done spinach.
If it's green.
Yeah.
It looks medicinal.
Spinach, you don't really taste it, you know, when you put it in. So, but you're right. There's this little, I think it's something just ingrained in us the way we were brought up.
It's kind of like the eggs, what you were saying, putting vegetables in for breakfast. You have to get over it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think what I've learned about nutrition. So, you know, I've been working in nutrition for 5 years now, and I would absolutely say it's a journey, you know, kind of I thought my diet was pretty good before I started. I've definitely changed, and I can feel my body has changed in terms of how my body responds to food. But it really is. I think it's a bit trying to make change in our body. It's a bit like trying to turn a tanker. You know, it's we have, and if we get back to insulin, you know, if you're somebody who's been driven by insulin an awful lot, it is going to take you a while to make those changes because your body is used to operating in a certain way. It's kind of metabolically set up to go down certain routes. I think everything and everything nutrition-based, you can definitely see some benefit in the short term. Also, you'll see much more over the long term. So, you know, I think it is a case of just always making changes. And then sometimes you might slip back a bit and then you go back and you go and take 2 steps forward again. So,
yeah. And that is something that can play with you mentally. Like you get aggravated with yourself, but it's interesting because I was reading your articles and I was also reading another book that talked a lot about what, you know, how important your health is, especially as you get older and how just conditions just can be exasperated by what you eat. And I was like, yeah, I am going to do this. And my husband came home yesterday. He works for a retailer. And this is the time of year where they would typically have a big sales meeting and all the vendors would come in, but they can't do that this year. He came home with a huge box full of, oh my goodness, I don't know how many packages of M&Ms were in there. I mean, there was Twinkies. There was all this processed food.
And those scare me.
and it was. I was like, they'll be here in 200 years. Those Twinkies will be. But
if people want to get in touch with you, what is the easiest way for them to do so?
So they can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Caroline Keating, K-E-A-T-I-N-G-E. I've got a little secret silent E on there. Or my website is www.carolinekeating.com, or I'm on Facebook as Caroline Keating Nutrition. And the easiest way to get in touch with me is to DM me through Instagram or go on my website and there's a contact me button.
Right. And you have group and one-on-one? Yes, I saw that on your website.
And one-on-one. So I do group at the moment. I do a 6-week menopause program, which is pretty full on because we cover so much information, but I've done it in 6 weeks. Partly I used to work with women over 12 weeks only, and I shortened it as a result of COVID. People were feeling a bit financially constrained and not sure what was coming up. So I wanted to make it more accessible. Mm-hmm. But then I work with women on a one-on-one basis as well. And as I said, I'm launching in the new year a weight loss program, which is really going to be focused on weight loss from a menopause perspective. So supporting you menopausally, dealing with weight loss. And most of my programs, we parallel track nutrition as well as working on all of the stress self. Because if you don't work on that, the other stuff doesn't work.
Isn't going to work. And she also has some really great recipes on there. So,
yes, yeah. You do. And they're very colorful.
Yes. I really, it's something simple like that really resonates with people. And they can keep that in mind when they're trying to decide what to eat. Okay, having some color in here. And I'm not talking icing or food coloring, not that kind of color. Yeah.
Darn.
Yeah, too bad.
But also it does make it simple because people want to be told, okay, go grab these ingredients and that will be healthy for you. They don't want to have to do the research. And a lot of the times you have beautiful pictures on your Instagram of food, but you also explain, okay, this is what you do. Make it a bunch of it, like you said, the frittata, and you have it for the week. So
Yeah.
I'm all about making, you know, none of us have
a lot of time,
abundance of time.
Right. Thank you so much for coming
Caroline.
So we really appreciate it. And we will have all your information in the show notes. So thank you.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Caroline, so much for just giving us all this wonderful information. And check out her website, like we said, because it has great recipes on it. I really loved that. She has some great blogs, some great articles that have been published in magazines and things that she writes just for your information.
Right.
Yeah. So I think
it's all free.
It's all free. Yep. And it's just so useful. And I really like how she puts foods out there that you're like, okay, these are the things that I should be having. I didn't realize how much of a role that nuts and seeds play in getting your nutritional value in. So I really do appreciate that.
And if you have diverticulitis, please be careful on the nuts and seeds because you're not supposed to be having them. So always check with your doctor when you're doing any of this, because as we get older, we all know there are things that we shouldn't have. So check with your doctor. But, you know, I'm one of those people where if you tell me what I should eat, I'll eat it. But if you just say, get this amount of protein and this amount of, I'm like cooking for dummies. You have to say, make chicken with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she's great about that. Mm-hmm. And we will have all of her information on the show notes, as well as lots of information on our website just about us and what we're doing. We have a whole store now of merch. So if you want to have a Hot Flashes and Cool Topics merch, check that out. Please follow us on all forms of social media. We have a big Facebook group of women that just is so wonderful, and everybody's sharing, and it's a great community that we have built on there. So we're really proud of that. And if you want to get in touch with us, hotflashescooltopics@gmail.com.
Right. And we're going to start doing videos too of our podcast. So if you want to see the live video, you can go on over to YouTube to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, and you can see the video of our podcast as well. And yeah.
Everybody have a wonderful week. We will talk to you next week. And thanks for listening.
Bye.